So today we are meeting with Cesaria.
Cesaria.
Cesaria. And she is from Ukraine. And we're going to talk with Cesaria today about her personal experience with the war in Ukraine, the invasion in 2022, and a few other things personally and how that impacted you. So, first off, I want to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Okay, my name is Cesaria Mancherova. I'm 23. I'm Ukrainian and I live my whole life in Ukraine. I have a bachelor in arts. I'm an actress and right now I'm working on my YouTube channel where I translate Ukrainian poetry into English to because I want to spread my culture and maybe I will get some people interested in my culture, or maybe it will inspire some research, etc., because in this time of the big destruction and in this time there are a lot of deaths, I want to create something new. I want to create something that would continue living, even if I don't live. Because this is the thing, like, why Russians are here on my land is to some people think it's just territory, it's just resources like mines, factories, etc., etc. No, like the number one goal is to destroy Ukraine as such. Ukraine as our culture, our language, our heritage, our history. And actually there was an article which Russians published, so like I'm not making it up because Russians say that Ukrainians make everything up. This time they published it on the like RIA Novosti or something, what Russia should do to Ukraine. And their like number one goals were to censor our education, our language, and our history. Like, it's their words. So yeah, I want to preserve that. I really, really want that.
Great, great. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into that in just a moment, but I also want to ask you just one more little thing about yourself. I know you speak several different languages to different degrees and all that, and you have a really big passion for the Ukrainian language itself as well, being able to teach that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So I speak, let's go, Ukrainian, the language that I don't speak after the 24th of February, English, French, and German, not so good, and I'm learning Brazilian Portuguese. But the thing is, I wasn't so passionate about Ukrainian language and Ukrainian culture before the full-scale invasion. So, yeah, there is a joke like Ukrainization пришла успешно, Ukrainization went successfully. Yeah, they wanted to kind of like destroy our spirit and to invite us to like friendship, that to tell us that Ukraine is worth nothing and new cultures where nothing can be with us can be like us, but it worked in reverse actually. So yeah, I tutored American citizens. I taught them Ukrainian language, and I discovered that I really like that. Like to spread this knowledge, to sow the seeds of Ukrainian knowledge. And I really like that.
Great. So let me ask you about your personal experience of the Russian invasion in February 2022, and how did it affect you when you first heard the news?
Well, like the full-scale invasion was a complete shift in mentality. This is the 24th of February was when our lives became different, like all of our lives. So the thing was that there were a lot of talks about how is Russia going to invade us or not, because there are like hundreds of thousands of Russian soldiers on like beside our borders, like just on our borders. And some experts would say that they would invade us on the 20th. February, so that became of kind of like a joke. Like in winter, we have this list of holidays, and every time when we want to do something important, we say після свят, like after the holidays, after the Christmas, після Різдва, після Щедрування, після Коляди, після того всього. And this was like the joke after the 20th. Should we meet? after the 20th. Okay, like this was the day X. They either invade us or not, and they didn't do it on the 20th. They did it on the 24th, and we kind of, as a society, we didn't expect that to happening on the 24th. So,
I want to interrupt you real quickly. Yeah. Where did the 20th come into play? How did that date?
I don't know. There were like constant TV shows, constant news. There were a lot of talks on the news by politicians, by experts who were kind of trying to predict when this is going to happen and if this is going to 100% happen, because we were at war like from 2014, so it's been going on for 10 years, so Russian soldiers who've been in our land for 10 years, so Russian soldiers being in our land would not be like complete news, it's just that full-scale invasion, this is what changed. I don't know, they kind of like predicted it, I don't know how they predicted it, they just thought that it would be, you know, there's Rozvedka, how do you say, like a spying, but not a spying, a smarter word for that, I don't know, Rozvedka, like. When you try to figure out what your enemies are doing, how do you call that? What is the
Spying is a good term, but I understand what you're saying. The idea there,
yeah,
perhaps, like, more like strategic discerning of their actions.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. And so what were your immediate thoughts and actions when you heard the news and you realized the country was under attack? What went through your mind? What was your day like that day, if you remember?
Days before that, actually the night before that, we were preparing a play, so we were rehearsing, and we were planning on doing a rehearsal on the 24th or 25th, and I remember that at that time my passport was about to be expired, so I was determined to wake up early on the 24th and to go and submit my documents for my passport renewal, all that bureaucracy that I hated, and I told myself that I have to wake up and go and do it. So I'm waking up with the alarm, and the moment my mom hears the alarm and she enters the room, and they're like, and she says, "Wake up, it started, we're being bombed." This is the first thing I hear for the first time in my life. And I'm there like, bombed where? And she says, everywhere. Kharkiv, Kyiv, Divna, Odessa, Mariupol, they bombing everywhere.
Mm. And you were, as a reminder, you were in Lviv at this time?
Yeah, I was the whole time in Lviv.
They're bombing everywhere, wow.
And I was, this was because I don't hear bombs, so that's why I asked. We didn't know what the war is, because we thought, like, I read a remark, but this is all I knew about war.
Mm-hmm.
War is not just the front line, where the bombs are, like, constantly dropping, but even in Lviv, where bombs are not constantly dropping and there are no Russian tanks, mm-hmm. but we're still at war. So what is this complex... the problem that happens in the whole society, like it's not just about bombs and bullets.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that at that time, so I thought if we're at war, then everything should crumble. Like, if they're bombing, how do I not hear bombings? But they were bombing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just, I was lucky to be woken up by my mom. People in other cities, like bigger cities, Kharkiv, Kyiv, Mariupol, they were woken up by bombs at 5 a.m.
Mm.
There was another dude who did the same thing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Putin was making excuses for that dude in his last interview. So, like, that's not even me making this up, dudes. Russians say that we make things up, Ukrainians. Yeah, that's your president said. Yes, did you see that interview?
I saw snippets and parts of it. I've yet to watch the thing in its entirety.
Poland should have given their territories peacefully to Germany, but they overplayed and they didn't do it. This is why Hitler had to do it. Jesus. Oh my God. Yeah.
In the time after your mom woke you up, and then in the days and maybe even weeks after, how did your daily life change in the aftermath of hearing the news of the invasion?
Well, first, everybody was stressed. There was an instant flood of a po of emotional presence, but there are people who were forcefully displaced from their homes from east, and people also from Kyiv and Kharkiv. They were also running west to either to go abroad or to just more western cities in Ukraine. I remember this was the only moment in my life. I was on the 24th in the morning, I was looking at the sky because I had a peaceful sky and I thought that I wouldn't be seeing that for a long time, and I was looking at the sky, it was the sole purpose of looking at the sky, and I across the street a guy is standing in the window and doing the exact same thing, looking in the sky. And I will never forget that, because we don't look at the sky with the sole purpose of looking at the sky. We drink coffee and look at the sky, we smoke a cigarette and we look at the sky, we talk to our friends and we look at the sky, we eat dinner and we look at the sky, but we never look at the sky with the purpose of looking at the sky. And this was this like moment when we just look. And I have never had that before, and I've never experienced that after.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I had the privilege of looking at the peaceful sky. At that time, there was like my kind of friend we met at the workshop in stage fighting, and he was, I don't remember, either somewhere in the south city or somewhere near Kyiv. So, you know, those cities were occupied, like the Kyiv and Kharkiv Oblast region,
right.
Some of the cities were occupied. And the following days, I was watching him in an occupied city. Like, I see stories of my friends, and they post, like, this is a helicopter. Is this our helicopter? And then they say, no, it's not our helicopter. Or how they post, like, tanks in their streets. And then I was looking forward to see the stories in Instagram from him,
mm-hmm.
because he was in the occupied city and he was in occupation for like a couple of weeks. And then he started posting more rarely, and because like he writes, there were Russians in our village. They took our phones. I gave them another phone. I hid my phone. We don't have electricity. We don't have heating. We don't have water. I don't know how long my battery is gonna last. They broke into our house and they killed our dog. They almost killed me and my uncle. Like they made us go into the cellar and they almost killed us. And I was like watching this in kind of like real time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said like I don't know if I'm gonna like come out of it alive. And then the following days pass and I don't see any stories from him. And this was experienced for a lot of people who were watching their kind of friends being in occupation in real life. I know a friend from my wrestling team who came from a city, like he said, I got out by car, and 2 hours after I got out, nobody could get out because they were occupied. And we were just saying, in the morning, we were sitting on the mats and talking, and he's like, yeah, there is a Russian tank parked on my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking like they broke into his house, they shot his, he told me, I bought a new TV and they just shot it from AK just because they couldn't stand the idea that we had something they didn't have. And he said, they didn't take my books, they don't need books. They didn't take my wrestling uniform, they don't need uniforms. My гишечки взяли, my geese weren't taken.
Oh.
Yeah, just, you know, there was a Russian tank parked in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. We were talking like all the time with constant bombings of like Kharkiv and Mariupol. And who doesn't know what Mariupol is, you should Google it. They were making a wasteland of Mariupol, constant shelling of Mariupol. And we were watching that in the news. And, they were also bombing a lot of Kharkiv and Kyiv and all these occupied regions. And a lot of people were saying that there is this, I think some scientists said that it takes 21 days to form a habit. So it takes 21 days for you to get used to something.
Okay.
And people were saying, how can I get used to this? And I don't want to get used to this. And, but yeah, you get used to everything. So yeah, this is true. First 21 days, like I obviously I didn't count, but that was first month was very, very, very stressful. The huge amount of stress, and I lost weight, even though I was eating a lot, but I was losing weight because of the stress. And at that time, we were back then afraid of the sirens, because now I sleep through the sirens and bombings, but that's done by professionals. Do not repeat at home. The first 20 days were like very stressful, and people were volunteering a lot. Basically, all we were doing was volunteering, because there were a lot of forcefully displaced people from other territories, mm-hmm. and we were helping them with shelter, with food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we started going back to work. So,
tell me a little more. I want to kind of key in on that. You're right, there's a huge volunteer effort that stepped up, and I think you're talking about your personal stories. I'd kind of want to ask you more about the local volunteer effort in Ukraine, and all the Ukrainians that stepped up to help their fellow countrymen. I know there's a lot of press on international aid, international NGOs, international volunteers, but how did you see the local community around you step up, and how did that impact the war victory effort with all the local volunteers stepping up that way to help displaced people and people less fortunate themselves out east?
Well, at that time, it seemed like everyone was doing something to help someone. And in Lviv, it was the point where most of the displaced people were going to, so there were constant trains coming to the train station with packed with people. You should Google like the evacuation trains from Kharkiv. Like, there are these photo comparisons of what was happening in Europe during the Second World War, and on the railway station when people are trying to flee to get out, and what was happening in Kharkiv at that time. Like, trains were just packed. And so we were trying to help to bring like food and hygiene necessities, water, etc. Other people were making, not building shelters, but helping turn buildings into shelters. Like, we, for example, we would remove this table and bring like pillows and covers here so people could sleep here.
Okay.
And it was happening everywhere, like in the theaters turned to shelters. There were people constantly like being sleeping on the stages, in the corridors, in the rehearsal rooms, like everywhere, in the museums. So yeah, everyone was doing something.
Okay.
People who were not in Lviv, like in, for example, in occupied territories, I've heard stories of complete strangers, like someone has a car and someone does not, but both have to get out of the territory that is about to get occupied. So like, complete stranger would say, hey, hop in, I'll drive you. And even though the car was already packed full, but like, complete strangers were helping another complete strangers to get out of this trouble.
Okay. Let me ask you this, from, once again, your unique perspective has experienced this firsthand. What message would you say to international volunteers who are researching and looking and planning to come over here and help out for 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, whatever length they have? What would you tell them based on everything you've been through so far about what to expect coming here?
What to expect?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. What to expect? When you come here, you might think that, oh, in Lviv, they are not bombing as many times as they do in the other parts of Ukraine. So, like, oh, it's fine. Like, people are drinking coffee, so, oh, so it's not that bad, right? But, like, it's not the truth. The war is going on, and what's happening in the eastern part is hell, and what our soldiers go through is hell, and what people in occupied territories go still are going through is hell. So if you come to Lviv and you see like people, I don't know, having fun, being in the cafes, it doesn't mean that the war is not going on. So don't make mistake of thinking that it's fine, because it's not, and we're not fine. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just for 2 weeks. What can you do in 2 weeks? I don't know. It's just kind of.
Well, there are a number of international volunteers who have a limited time off of their work, for example, mm-hmm. or they can only take a short amount of time from their family duties, for example. And they know they want to come over and make an impact in some way beyond giving money online. So when they come over, they have that time window to contribute. What are your thoughts on that? What does Ukraine need from a volunteer effort, both local and international, to continue the victory push?
Okay, number one, money. So donate money. I think you would be making a really big effort and contribution if you, like, monthly or better daily donated money to some, like, Banchka. There is a jar in Monobank. We have, like, jars.
Okay.
Virtual jars where we send money, and for those money people buy weapons, drones, etc. So that would be cool if you donate money like daily, even if all you can do is donate 1 euro. It's good. This is what most people are doing. We donate even sometimes even less than euro. So like if the only thing you can do is donate a euro a day, then please do it. This will be very helpful. And spread information and battle misinformation. Take time to make space in your social media for Ukraine. Like, post anything you want. You might post something about Russian captivity that is very big problem right now, or like something else. Just spread information. Because in Lviv, this is now a bit different. There are not so many urgent cases in Lviv particularly that need help. People in more southern, eastern territories, they need like more help. So a lot of volunteers that are doing the lab work, let's put it this way, they are either somewhere there, they are evacuating civilians or like doing, you know, this stuff. But here you can, plus this, you can like, you know, okay, there is this kind of net mm-hmm. that soldiers need to, like, they cover themselves up to
camouflage netting.
Yeah, with the lens. Yeah, so, like, you could do this. Okay. And, there are now so many urgent cases as it was in the beginning of the full-scale invasion.
Okay.
So, yeah, just, I think donating money would be really, really helpful, like, daily.
Okay.
Any sum.
Okay. I'll wrap up here, and I want to open it up to you and just simply say, what else? If there's anything else you could share on this platform, either from your personal perspective of what you went through or maybe continuing to go through now on a daily basis, and what would you like to share with volunteer community about the victory effort in Ukraine?
The victory effort in Ukraine. So, I want everyone to understand that this war is existential war. And I'm going to say it again, that Russians don't come here for resources, because they have this mentality, if I can't have it, then no one can have it. And you can see this by photos of Avdiivka, for example, of Bakhmut. They are leaving wastelands behind them. If they can't have Bakhmut, no one will be able to help Bakhmut, because we will leave a wasteland behind. And they're like, we captured Avdiivka, you made a wasteland of Avdiivka. It's not about resources, it's about matter of destruction. And the genocide, because this is genocide, has been going on for years, for decades, for centuries. Because for example, in SSR, USSR, people were killed and prosecuted for speaking Ukrainian language. and Ukrainian education was oppressed. Like, it was forbidden to have books in Ukrainian language, and this is what they are doing in the occupied territories right now. You can't study Ukrainian language. If you speak Ukrainian language, you will be tortured, you will be killed. If they find Ukrainian books, they burn Ukrainian books and libraries, etc., etc. There is a photo of like Mariupol, like there is the sign that says "Welcome to" and the name of the city and like Mariupol, and it was written in Ukrainian. And there is a photo of how they take this sign down and put Mariupol written in Russian. There is just one letter that is different, but this letter matter because that letter was Ukrainian letter. Hmm. That was different. And it was taken down. Like, they want to destroy us as a nation. And if armed forces of Ukraine fall, then like everything will fall. Everyone who speaks Ukrainian will be raped, tortured, or killed. If they don't obey, I will be killed because I speak Ukrainian and I will not stop speaking Ukrainian. Like if they come here, I will be raped for like what I do on my YouTube when I translate Ukrainian poetry and read it in Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. They want to make us to forget our history. So it would be easier. They want us to be like them. And they say we are Nazis because now, in their opinion, a Nazi is a Ukrainian who refuses to call themselves Russian. So our only sin in this war is being different and not wanting to be the same as them. So don't make a mistake of thinking, oh, this is only about the territories, this is only about the politics, this is only about the resources of factories and mines. No, 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 this is about culture. And if they can't have Ukraine, they will want to destroy Ukraine. They will not be interested in, like, just leaving. They will want to make a wasteland, mm-hmm. just like they did of Mariupol, where they were constantly shelling it.
I want to... Thank you for that perspective. I want to wrap up with two selfish questions, if I may. First one is, what is your definition of someone who cares about something or someone else or a situation? How would you define caring about something?
Caring about something, to take action to protect it. In any way you consider fit. For example, if I care about Ukrainian culture, I take small steps, small actions to try to spread it, to report it, to contribute to it. If you care about a person, you take action, you have to ask what is needed in this particular situation and do what is needed. Not what you think is needed, but what is actually needed. Take actions, mostly take okay. actions, because the time for opinions has passed. Now yeah. it's time to do something. Even if you can do a big thing, even the only thing you can do is make one post in social media, then do it. It will be help. It will really be helpful.
Okay. My follow-up question to that is, do you think God cares about Ukraine?
Who cares?
Do you think God cares about Ukraine?
God. God slept through Holocaust. God is sleeping through our genocide. What God? Where is God?
I wanted to hear your answer. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I'm not a religious person, but if God is somewhere there, like, he has some explaining to do. Although that's just younger Gen Z me, because Ukrainians are, especially Svetoliction, most people are very religious, no. But, like, who do you pray to, guys? Who is this guy you're praying to? Prayers won't help. Weapons will help. And any soldier you ask, any Ukrainian soldier you ask, what do you need for help? They will not tell you we need prayers. No, prayers don't help out there because they've seen limbs torn off. They have seen their brothers and sisters being killed, their bodies being mangled. Where the man who weighed, for example, 180 pounds, now is like the size of like 57 centimeters, and they've seen this, and they mm-hmm. take taking those pieces of their brothers and sisters, and they send them like to because they have to send something to the family to bury. Mm. What prayers? And if you say them, oh, I pray, I'm praying, I don't, they will say you, I don't need prayers, I need drones, I need weapons.
Thank you for that. Where can someone find you on YouTube and Instagram to follow your videos and work?
Where? Okay, it is Cesaria Lords in Instagram. S-A-E-C-A-E-S-A-R-I-A. And this is spelled the same way on the YouTube. I think you will find it. There is like a red picture.
Fantastic. Well, I want to say thank you for your time and sharing your personal perspective here. I think it's really great and very helpful to hear the local perspective on the invasion and how it's impacting. So thank you.
Thank you.